What we're gonna do right here is go back, way back, back into time.
This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. Welcome to my neighborhood, the Avenue. I grew up here, and each week I'll be sharing the sounds and stories of the people that made the Avenue great. Welcome back to the Avenue. In November of 2023, the Spinners were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The Spinners rose to prominence in the 1960s with Detroit's Motown Records. During the 1970s, the Spinners were signed to Atlantic Records. Their Tom Bell-produced recordings for Atlantic helped to define the sound of Philadelphia soul. But very few music fans know about the Spinners' Naptown connection. For the next 2 weeks on Echoes of Indiana Avenue, we'll be joined by two Indianapolis music legends who were part of the Spinners. Alan Tuck Burke, who worked as keyboardist and music director for the Spinners for over 25 years, and Rodney Stepp, who served as keyboardist and assistant music director from 1974 until 1981. Rodney Stepp will be hosting a special tribute to the Spinners as part of his Holiday on the Avenue Soul Review at the Walker Theater on December the 2nd. Go to MadamWalkerLegacyCenter.org for more information. We'll start things off with a classic Spinners track featuring Rodney Stepp on organ. From the 1975 album Spinners Live, this is Could It Be I'm Falling In Love. That was the Spinners with Could It Be I'm Falling In Love, featuring Naptown's own Rodney Stepp on keys. On this week's show, we're exploring the Spinners' connection to Naptown with Rodney Stepp and Alan Tuck Burke. They recently spoke with WFYI's Kyle Long. Let's join their conversation.
Thank you both for being here. Do you want to introduce yourselves just so people can get acquainted with your voices as we get started?
I'm Alan Burke, nicknamed Turk, and I go way back with the Spinners into the mid-60s.
And my name is Rodney Stepp, and hey, I go way back with Turk, okay, because he was my mentor and my leader and my inspiration. So, hey, that's who we are.
Yeah, we're going to talk about your individual work with the Spinners today. The Spinners were first formed in Ferndale, Michigan in 1954. Next year will be the 70th anniversary of the founding of the group. And one of the original founders of the Spinners was Billy Henderson, who was born here in Indianapolis in 1939. And throughout the group's history, they always maintained some connections with Indianapolis, pretty significant connections. And we're going to talk about that today. I know there are many players here in the city, Rodney Voorhees, Larry King. We're going to go on and on. You guys know people that I'm not aware of that played with the group. So we're going to talk about those indie connections with the Spinners today. Obviously, the Spinners were just inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and this was a huge moment for the group and brought them back into the spotlight. As we get started, I just wanted to hear each of you kind of give your thoughts on seeing the Spinners, your former band, inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I think it's an awesome thing that they're finally getting the recognition that they've deserved for so long as a group. And frankly, the connection, I won't say the connection with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but our first official business with them, I'm probably skipping around, but this was in like 98, 99. They had contacted us about getting some things for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum. And, you know, really, when all that happened, I was thinking that they were getting ready to get in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame soon. So I was looking forward to it.
Took a while.
Never happened. I was gone quite a while, but I'm really glad to see the group in there.
And how long were you with the Spinners in total? I've heard over 23 years. Is that right? Roughly 23?
It's over that. With the, if you add the years in the 60s that I played with them, Rodney and I will both talk about that. And I first started touring with them in the 70s. And then went back in the 80s for 20 more years. So it's about 25, 26
wow.
years.
It's incredible. Rodney, how did you feel when you heard they were getting inducted, and how has this moved you seeing this happen?
Oh, man, I tell you what, it was awesome for me because that's an incredible feat. I mean, that's just history, legendary. And then me to feel like, hey, I was a part of this, whether I was included or not, it didn't even matter, you know. But because I know we were a major part of that history. And as you look at, and I'm so happy for the guys, it took too long. I wish it had been sooner, like Turk said, because we've lost so many of them. I mean, basically 4 out of the 5 are gone. And then, you know, just that alone, you know, it's... you just wish it had happened sooner. And then I thought, too, that, you know, it's not up to me to say these type of things, but I feel like some of the selections of groups, I'm not saying they weren't worthy, but I thought the Spinners were much more worthy than some that were put in 5 years ago when they were on the ballot. So,
agreed.
You know, I'll just leave it at that. Yeah. But I am. I'm ecstatic about them getting in.
There's a lot of politics in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, especially as it relates to who gets invited to these ceremonies. I remember when the Ink Spots were inducted back in the 90s, the only Indianapolis group to make it to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They didn't invite Jerry Daniels, who was one of the 4 founding members of the group. Did you guys feel like slighted, or would you have liked to have been invited? How did you feel about, like, major members of the vocalists with the group I've heard were not invited? Did you have any sense of bitterness about that at all?
I would have loved to have been there, but I didn't want to get involved in those politics. It was kind of surprising how all that came about, because we did witness some other people that are really close to the group and very important members that helped in their history on their rise not be able to be there. But like Rodney said, I was just so proud for them and knowing that we had a big part on them. Rodney was on the biggest stages with them, and I have a lot of time with them. So we're proud ourselves for them.
Rodney, any sense of bitterness at the politics of all this?
No bitterness, disappointment, maybe, because, like as Turk said, I mean, you know, when you look at former management, former lead singers, and their families that had a lot to do with the group, and because of our history, Turk and I have so much history with them at, you know, various times, but his, of course, is the longest tenure, but at the same time, I mean, you know, I was just thinking about Turk, like the roadies, like L.G. Stover and David and, you know, all the people that grew up, a big man and all these people that people wouldn't know about, the behind the scenes people that really make all this go. And, you know, hey, man, slap me if you want to, but, you can't do it without a good rhythm section. And the Spinners had some of the best rhythm sections out there. I mean,
and a lot of Indianapolis players.
And yeah. a lot of Indianapolis players. Yeah. And I'm telling you, everywhere we went, people were like, just applauded, you know, the band. I mean, I know Turk got many offers to go many places, and that's why he ended up playing with Marvin and Aretha and everybody else, you know. And that's the other thing. We support each other. We're not jealous of one another. We're not those type of people, man. Our egos are really cool. And again, happy for the guys, but yes, disappointed that more of us wasn't included. And I mean, forget me. This man here,
20
some years,
yeah,
he deserves.
Absolutely.
And the musical director,
absolutely,
he deserves it.
Let's take a break from our conversation with Turk and Step and listen to an early hit by the Spinners. From 1961, this is the Spinners with That's What Girls Are Made For.
Kiss 'em. You gotta love 'em. Then you miss them. Whoa.
That was the Spinners with That's What Girls Are Made For. On this week's show, we're exploring the Spinners' connection to Neptown with Rodney Stepp and Alan Turk Burke, two legendary Indianapolis musicians who were part of the Spinners band. Let's return to our conversation with Turk and Step as they discussed the Naptown musicians who played with the Spinners.
Before we get into your individual histories with the group, let's talk about some of those Indianapolis musicians. I mean, I was trying to think of Rodney Voorhees, Larry King, was Miles Butch Lloyd part of the group? Tell me about those guys, and who am I forgetting?
Oh, man, come on. Well, of course, Rodney was with me in the Diplomats when we were in high school. So we go way back. As a matter of fact, Rodney Voorhees, Jerry Miller, and Bobby Gayhart were one of the first musicians that went out with the Spinners in 1969. Mm-hmm. After Rodney had graduated from Christmas Attucks, that was the first time that they had started really trying to start putting bands together, because as Turk can allude to, before then we were with Designated Productions, and which is how we met the Spinners, and we'll talk about that later. But the bands were, and the musicians, that's how Indianapolis musicians became discovered. But yeah, we had Rodney Voorhees on bass. We even had Jerry Miller on guitar, Bobby Gayhart on drums. We had Miles Lloyd on organ and keys. Larry King, of course, ended up with them, as well as the OJ's and Sister Sledge. Mm-hmm. And I'll take credit for that. Mm-hmm. I got him the gig, both gigs, because I was out on the road and the OJ's needed a bass player. And I said, hey, I got a friend, you know.
You mentioned you had a cousin that played with him, too.
Oh,
right?
How can I forget that? Mike Simmons played with Turk. Turk hired Mike. And and Mike, of course, is the older brother of Bill Simmons, my cousin from Midnight Star.
Yeah.
So
did we forget any?
It's all entwined.
Yeah.
Turk, did we forget any Indianapolis players that?
I don't think so. I was going through it, and actually a couple of names that Rodney had mentioned, I was, he was with the group too. You know?
And a lot of these guys came out of the Avenue neighborhood, right? Including you, who grew up in the Flanner House neighborhood.
Yes.
Yeah, it's incredible that that's part of the legacy of the Spinners, our local neighborhood Indiana Avenue, is part of that group's legacy.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's a credit to Indianapolis musicians and just... the work ethic and everything else of Indianapolis guys. It's always been said we've had to almost leave here to have some type of success. And it's, You know, it's really kind of a shame that nothing really has taken off in our city. Individual-wise, yes. I mean, actors, Babyface, all of, you know, other people, but groups and stuff. You know, the Vanguard's made it so far, and even the rock groups, Roadmaster or Henry Lee Summer or, you know, this and that. We've had great talent. I just don't know what the jinx is. Hey, Fingers, I was talking about them earlier.
Right.
Man, I'd come home, man, I'm telling you, that was my favorite group to go see.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe three people were making that sound. Anyway, well, I don't want to, you know.
Well, since you brought that up, Turk, I did want to ask about your extensive history in music here in Indianapolis. I mean, you've been in the group Fingers, as Rodney mentioned, Fresh, Sold Out. You've been in a lot of prominent groups here. I don't know if this was Indianapolis-based, but Black Magic with Dwayne Garvin, one of my favorite drummers. Tell me if I'm correct. The first group that I think you started was it the Allen Burke Limited back in the early 60s? Is that right?
That was a jazz group.
Okay.
That we had... Cliff Ratliff was on trumpet, and a guy from Shortridge High School, that Greg Nicely, played baritone sax, and Kent Brinkley was a bass player.
Amazing, yeah.
And Donald Sweat, who you may or may not remember,
drummer
moved to Boston, and we used to play at the 11th Hour over on Central. It was a coffee house there. And we were just young musicians loving jazz, and that was where my backbone was back then. And we were fortunate enough and blessed enough to get mentioned in Downbeat magazine for what we were doing over at the 11th Hour.
Let's pause and listen to a classic hit by the Spinners. From 1970, this is It's a Shame, co-written by Stevie Wonder. Stay tuned. Echoes of Indiana Avenue will return with more words and music from Alan Turk Burke and Rodney Stepp after this short break. This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. On this week's show, we're exploring the Spinner's connection to Naptown with Rodney Stepp and Alan Turk Burke. Spinner's co-founder, Billy Henderson, was born in Indianapolis in 1939. Henderson's cousin, Rudy Smith, was an influential figure in the early Naptown soul scene. Smith was part of Designated Productions, an artist management agency that worked with young Indianapolis musicians, including Stepp and Burke. Let's return to our conversation with Turk and Stepp as they discuss Designated Productions.
The time when we were doing things with Designated Productions was really a lot of the first things that we were doing. Rodney and I were in separate bands at the time. Just to touch on that, Rudy Smith, who is Billy's cousin, had the contact and had the Spinners come on in to play over at the roller rink over on the east side of town.
Oh, yeah, Schofield.
Schofield. And they were with Motown. They had some regional hits. The Spinners didn't have any major hits at that time, but they had Truly Yours, I'll Always Love You. And of course, That's What Girls Are Made For, which is their first doo-wop hit from '61. So the Spinners did not have a band then. but they had the charts from the recording that Maurice King had done. Mm-hmm. Billy would come, like Rodney said, early and spend time with the musicians and work with us. And, you know, we had a lot of good musicians there. And some of the guys didn't read music, although they were great players. We did the show out to the skating rink, and it all started from there, you know, with did a really good job. And then it ended up anytime the Spinners came back in the area, we would play with them. And then that spread to where we were doing surrounding states. And you remember this, Rodney, when we go out, you know, we were too young to really go mm-hmm. on our own. We had chaperones from Designated Productions taking us there and bringing us back because I was in high school at the time.
And that's the only way our parents would let us go, too, is to make sure that there were some chaperones that took care of us, although never mind.
Do you remember what year that was, Turk, that you played at the skating rink with the Spinners?
I think 66.
And how old would you have been at that time?
17.
Wow.
Or it was 65 and I was 16,
So you were still in high school and you're playing with the Spinners. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And to put this in perspective for folks, Designated Productions was a promotion and sort of production agency here in Indianapolis. They promoted concerts and they also sort of groomed young musicians to play on the professional circuit. And both of you really got your start in professional music, I think it's fair to say, through Designated Productions. Is that mm-hmm. correct?
That is correct.
And we got our degree.
And this was a group of four young men, correct, that
yes.
kind of formed Designated, Rudy Smith, Bo Ramsey. Tell me the guys who's
Freddie from. Thompson and Guy Russell were the other two.
Yeah. In your words, what was Designated Productions? Rodney, do you want to share?
Designated Productions was the best thing that ever happened to us, but we didn't know it. And I say we didn't know it because we were young. We were kids. And, you know, being kids, having fun, playing our music, and the discipline. Oh, they were disciplinarians. I mean, as far as rehearsal schedules, being on time, you know, wearing the right clothes. They were all about it. I will say, you know, Bobby Gayhart and I were the babies, so to speak, of Designated. As far as age goes, like when Turk was saying that in 66, when we played behind the Spinners as the Creation Show Band, I was playing saxophone then. And so I was playing sax with the group. And I was 14. You know, in 66. Well, 13, if it was in the summer, I was 13.
Mm-hmm. It was in the summer.
Uh-huh. And so I hadn't even turned 14 mm-hmm. yet. So I hadn't started high school. I'm telling you, man, it's Designated. You look at the pictures. They kept us outfitted. Mm-hmm. We always had tailor-made outfits. We didn't go to the rack in the store. They might have gone to the store on a couple of things, on a couple of glitter shirts or something. But most of our outfits were made. You had Turk's band, my band, the Sentimentals, Ray Johnson. I mean, the roster was just phenomenal, you know.
When we were doing these shows with these acts, a lot of times they would handpick certain people, so several of the members of the bands would combine for this, and that was just really exciting for me to expand that way and play with different people that I admired in the different bands they were in, you know.
And I didn't get to play keyboards in those bands.
Right?
I played sax, because he was the baddest keyboard player in the city and the man. And, hey, you know, that wasn't going to be dethroned, okay?
And, you know, when you were talking about way back, Rodney, I knew Rodney as a saxophone player. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know that he played keyboards, which... quite an understatement since he's the excellent keyboardist, just, you know, doing things all over. But I remember when you came over to my mother's house over on 40th Street, and I had a Hammond organ in the living room, and Rodney started playing, and I'm, what? What? We should have been doing this together.
You know, it was, I tell you, it was the first organ I ever played.
Wow.
Yeah,
it was
really
funny.
Was.
We were even doing things like I would get down on the floor and play
foot pedals. Yeah, he was playing foot pedals.
Playing
on the
foot
floor.
Pedals because I always loved bass and everything. And I've been playing foot pedals and Rodney's doing the keys up there. But that was just a big surprise to me because, you know, he's always been an excellent musician, but he was an excellent sax player and arranger. Mm-hmm. I know you were arranging things. Mm-hmm. But I didn't even know that he played keys. Yeah.
Let's take a break from our conversation with Stepp and Turk and listen to a classic Spinners track from Turk's time with the band. On May 14th of 1988, Atlantic Records held a 40th anniversary concert at Madison Square Garden. The event featured performances from dozens of stars, including Wilson Pickett, Jimmy Page, Robert Plant, Phil Collins, the Bee Gees, and the Spinners. Turk was working as the Spinners' musical director at that time. From the Atlantic Records 40th anniversary concert, this is the Spinners with Mighty Love. That was the Spinners with Mighty Love. On this week's show, we're exploring the Spinners' connection to Naptown with Rodney Stepp and Alan Turk Burke. Let's return to our conversation with Stepp and Turk.
And Turk, can you give us an overview of your time with the Spinners? We mentioned you played your first gig. It was in 1966, I believe you said. You spent over 25 years. Some of that was off and on with the group. You eventually became the music director. Give us an overview of your experience with the Spinners.
After the things I did with Designated Productions, and we each had a personal relationship with the guys there, so we were keeping in touch. You know, I know you were talking to Billy and Rodney Voorhees, and they were wanting me to go with them then, but I didn't start touring with them until right after the group signed with Atlantic Records, and they were getting ready to release that first album. But I started once they had changed to Atlantic Records. And Billy was telling me, we're getting ready to release this album, man. It's got some great stuff on it. I remember saying that I would start touring with the group, but I needed to do a 2 weeks' notice with the group I was already playing with. My first job with them was in New York. The group was with the they were at the Apollo.
Wow.
And we got together and just did all the big shows. And at that time, that's when the hits were boom, 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 boom. And they had, what, 5 gold records on that first album. And so we were doing all the big TV shows or large venues or whatever was going on at the time. So I feel blessed to have the opportunity to go a lot of places I could not go on my own.
What's funny about that is his first gig was in New York at the Apollo. My first gig was in New York at Madison Square Garden with him.
Yeah.
Other than we had done a warm-up at the 20 Grand before, because they had a new show, and so they wanted to do a warm-up at home in Detroit before they went out on this tour. And on that tour, it was Graham Central Station's very first gig, and Ashford and Simpson were the headliners.
Turk, so, you said you left a band with 2 weeks' notice to join the Spinners. What band was that, out of curiosity? Do you remember?
Man with a Horn, Tommy.
Oh, Tommy Wills. Tommy Wills. That's hilarious.
I was playing with Tommy Wills.
Wow, you went from Tommy Wills to the Spinners. That's incredible. Were the Spinners the first major group you went out on the road with?
Well, you know, like Rodney was saying, during the designated production days, I got to play with Patti LaBelle, which was Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells. This was prior to LaBelle. Mm.
You mentioned you were on, did a lot of shows with the Spinners, television appearances. What are some of the big memories you have of that? What programs were you on? What were some of the big concerts you did with the group?
In those early days, we were doing, you know, the morning shows that have the live performances now. We were doing the first of those. It's really something because it's grown a lot bigger than that. But we were doing the Today Show, Good Morning America, and the Tonight Show, and just all the late night shows. Man, really thinking about Mike Douglas, Merv Griffin's show, and even Pat Sajak had a show.
Are there any clips floating around that you know of that feature you during your time with the band on YouTube or anything?
There are some clips. Unfortunately, I haven't seen a lot that features me. I've seen more featuring Rodney.
Yeah, there's a bunch with Rodney. Yeah, I know that.
I've seen more featuring Rodney. But there's a lot of things out there that I knew I was on the show or I did the arrangements for the show. And on those TV shows, if our band wasn't playing live, sometimes I would sequence the accompaniment for them because, you know, you'd have you have 2 minutes to do it, so I have to edit a song, make a two-minute version of a song, and I would do that. So I would be at all the shows, whether I'm playing on them live or not.
Let's pause and listen to another track from Alan Burke's time with the Spinners. From their 1989 album, Down to Business, this is The Spinners with Memories of Allison. That was The Spinners with Memories of Allison. On this week's show, we're exploring the Spinners' connection to Neptown with Rodney Stepp and Alan Turk Burke. Turk worked with many legendary artists outside his time with the Spinners, including Aretha Franklin and Marvin Gaye. Let's return to our conversation as Turk discusses his work with the band's Fingers and Black Magic.
First, tell me about the group Fingers. Rodney alluded to this group. It was a group that had a big following here in Indianapolis, and I know you recorded a couple tracks with them.
Very proud of that group. I'd say that was probably one of my most creative situations because we were just three pieces. Myself on organ. I played Hammond B3, and I had a clavinet. And I played bass on a mini Moog. Bob Schuster was the other keyboard player who had the big Oberheim. And actually, when I met him, he had an Arp 2600. And I played Fender Rhodes. And then Russell Taylor was on drums. Each of us were lead singers. So the singing was really tight and excellent in there, and of course the playing was really something, and we just kind of arranged things to where it would sound full with just the three of us. Of course, you could, you know, with the keyboards, then they could mimic other instruments, but we didn't have the keyboards doing a lot of things that would be unnatural for it. But we just kind of divided it up to make sure the song was full, had a lot of energy. We played almost all over the country.
You weren't just here in Indianapolis. You were touring.
We played out to, we worked our way out to Phoenix and played a lot of things in Texas and everything in between.
You recorded some tracks in the studio with the group, right?
Studio scene, meaning somebody's basement.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they weren't finished things. I wish I had some truly finished product. I should have gone to Rodney's studio.
Yeah, yeah.
And done some things.
Four Fingers, you had Black Magic, which was a trio also, right? And at one point featured the Funky Buzzard, Dwayne Garvin,
Funky Buzzard,
legendary drummer. You eventually become Marvin Gaye's backing band, played with him on the Midnight Special in Atlanta in 1974, a legendary concert. Tell me about Black Magic and how you ended up with Marvin Gaye at the height of his career.
Well, it actually started with the Spinners because... once I left the Spinners, Joe Jackson had left with me, and actually Dolby had stayed with the Spinners for a while. And then once we came back to town, Joe was living in Cleveland, and we put together Black Magic in Cleveland with a drummer there. And that was... where you had only three people, and Joe sang too. So the drummer didn't sing, but we were doing a lot of songs that you would not expect three musicians to do. And Joe had moved. I'd always lived in Indianapolis, or during that time anyway, and Joe moved back to Indianapolis, and that's when we got with Dwayne Funky Buzzard Garvin. And of course he added a much heavier funk to what we were doing, so that was really nice. We used to play the End Zone over at 38th and Keystone, and we were pretty big deal over there. But LG Stover, he had previously had a relationship with Marvin Gaye, and really, I mean, we were all kind of intertwined there. I mean, you know, I know I'm sure you had a lot of contact with him up in Detroit when you were with the group, had told me that Marvin was getting ready to go back on tour. He hadn't done a live show for 5 years, although he continued to release songs. LJ had recorded part of our performance, took it back to Marvin, and he hired Black Magic, and that was the basis of the rhythm section for Marvin Gaye for the tour that he did, you know, when he had the... denim outfit with all the studs on it and the red skull cap, and you know, we did that tour with him. When we got together, we went out to Hollywood, and he put us up in a hotel, and we rehearsed for a month over at Paramount Studios. And Marvin would come over to the hotel where we were about 9:30, and we'd go out and play basketball. We played basketball for an hour and a half, 2 hours. And then after that, we go over to Marvin's mother's house and eat. She would feed us. And then around 1 or 2 o'clock, we go over to the studio and rehearse till like 10 o'clock at night. And, you know, I did that for a month before we started touring, which we really got to be very close.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for this week. Thanks for tuning in for the first episode in our two-part series exploring the Spinner's connection to Naptown. Tune in next week for the second half of our conversation with Rodney Stepp and Alan Turk Burke. Don't forget to mark your calendars. Rodney Stepp will be hosting a special tribute to the Spinners as part of his Holiday on the Avenue Soul Review at the Walker Theater on December the 2nd. Go to MadamWalkerLegacyCenter.org for more information. You can meet me here on the Avenue again next week, same time, same place. And you can find the Echoes of Indiana Avenue podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcast. Echoes of Indiana Avenue is written and produced by Kyle Long and hosted and co-produced by me, Herman Butch Slaughter.
Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do. Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do. If you will stop and listen, I will tell you a thing or two.